The Florida Gators fall to the Georgia Bulldogs for the third consecutive year by 20 or more points. Tonight, we recap the game in Jacksonville, and we talk about where the Gators go from here as they continue to build the program up to hopefully one day reach Georgia's level. This is the In All Kinds Weather Forecast. Jack Nicholson once said in A Few Good Men, you can't handle the truth, and Tom Cruise couldn't handle it, and neither can some of Gator Nation after the third consecutive thrashing the Bulldogs gave the Gators in Jacksonville yesterday. Tonight is Sunday, October 29, 2023, here in the heart of Gator Nation, and we welcome you in to another episode of the In All Kinds of Weather Forecast. I am your host, Chris Yanes, alongside my co-host, Neil Shulman. Make sure, if you have not already, to hit like and subscribe down below. Leave a comment. Helps us reach all of Gator Nation and continue to bring you all great content. So for the sixth year in 7 years, the number one Georgia Bulldogs beat the Florida Gators 43-20. This game once again highlighted the massive talent disparity between the two programs. Leading into the game, we noted the fact that Georgia had 13 five-stars lining up. Florida, one five-star. And that one five-star for Florida was torched by Carson Beck yesterday. The last four recruiting classes dating back to 2020, the Georgia Bulldogs, number one, number three, number three, number two. The Florida Gators in that same time span, number 7, 12, 17, and 12. Currently in 2024, it's one for Georgia and three for the Florida Gators, respectively. Obviously a vast improvement, but in order for the gap to close, that trend must continue for the next 2 to 3 cycles. And that talent disparity was on full display this Saturday as the Gators offensive line was manhandled by the Georgia defensive line and vice versa. Florida was not able to get one sack of Carson Beck. Graham Mertz found himself on the turf 4 times. Florida was not able to force a turnover of Carson Beck due to that. And Georgia had their way with our secondary being torched for over 350 yards through the air. The Gators definitely put up a valiant effort today, but if it, what we can see is that the Gators still have much work to do if they are to become the elite of college football again. So, Neil, we both were there this past Saturday. It was a tough loss, but I think when you really get down to it, we should have saw it coming. I don't understand. I think this doesn't necessarily change the perception of the program after yesterday.
So, I mean, Chris, you and I always say that we want to make the pod more interactive. So here's a chance for y'all to make your opinions known on Twitter and the comments, especially on this YouTube video. If you're listening on Spotify there too, tell me, what did you guys expect? What did you think was going to happen? Did you think it was going to be anything drastically different than we saw yesterday? Did you really think that Florida was going to give Georgia a 4-quarter fight? They fought for a quarter. Again, for the third year in a row. But as we saw, that's not good enough. You're going to wind up losing the game by 3 scores or more in the case of 2021. So I put this out on Twitter. I don't think the Gators really showed anything different than what we should have come to expect. And Chris, you're talking about the talent disparity. You just went back to the last 4 years. You're being nice. You're just spreading the blame with Napier in his first year. I guess if you want to say that's blame because he took over a bad situation, but you're only blaming Napier and Mullen. Georgia has out-recruited Florida for literally a decade now. Last year's cycle that was signed was the 10th year in a row that Georgia, according to the 247 Sports composite rankings, has out-recruited Florida, has finished with a better recruiting class than Florida. 247 Sports composite, for those who don't know, is a mashup of all the industry's different ranking systems. I mean, going back to 2013, there were different ones, I think, called Scout used to have one, but it incorporated 247, it incorporated ESPN, it incorporated Rivals. Now On3 is a new one. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. The names may have changed of the recruiting services, but Georgia has finished on top of Florida in the recruiting rankings, in the industry rankings, not just in one individual ranking system, in the composite for 10 years in a row. Now, that goes back to Mark Richt versus Will Muschamp. You don't fix that in a year. You don't fix that in 2 years.
And so, it's going to be even harder now that you have a guy like Kirby Smart who is on a roll. You know, Mark Richt, that was the problem. That's why he was fired from Georgia, is that he couldn't get over that 9-10 game hump. They bring in Kirby Smart, rather, and he has absolutely done that and exceeded those expectations. Georgia looked like a team on Saturday ready to win their third consecutive national title. That, you know, they lost Brock Bowers. It didn't matter. Ladd McConkey stepped up. Ra-Ra Thomas stepped up. Carson Beck played Oscar Dell played a great game. Carson Beck probably played his best game in college yet. It did not matter. This team, that's what great teams do. They find a way to overcome something like that. And that's, like you said, the talent disparity, the recruiting. That is an interesting stat, though, the 10-year mark. I didn't actually even think about it, but it makes sense if you go back now during that time span. Georgia now has won 7 times in the last decade. I mean, Georgia dominates this rivalry now. Florida, for 20 years, won the majority of the matchups. I would say in the last decade, it's Georgia's rivalry now. And for the foreseeable future, it's Georgia's rivalry. It has completely flipped against the Gators. And it's until Florida at least continue. I think they at least have to be in the ballpark of recruiting. And right now they are in the ballpark. I mean, we can go into the details of
number one versus number three. You can't really get too mad at that. It's when it's 3 versus 13 or 2 versus 14.
Right.
And you have multiple years of that in succession that you go, that's a problem.
And also, if you think back to I mentioned that Florida had the 7th, the 12th, the 17th, and the 12th recruiting class, respectively, in the last 4 years. The first two of those classes really are not even on the team anymore. We had to go through the transfer portal. This is a completely freshman, roster now that is playing. A lot of the transfers are the ones making the difference on this team. The guys that were recruited 4 years ago, 3-4 years ago, are making a difference today. And if you actually also look at the draft picks over the last 4 years, Georgia has 3 times the amount of draft picks that Florida does in that span. So the old argument was that Kirby Smart could recruit, but he couldn't develop. Now it's proven that he can do both. He's putting guys in the league, and Florida just isn't putting guys in the league. And if you look at Florida's roster right now, there's only maybe a handful that might be playing on an NFL roster next year. And granted, we are young, but that's because we just haven't recruited at an elite level to actually get guys to the NFL at a clip that the Georgia Bulldogs are.
And here's where we're seeing the difference between, stars don't matter because you'll always find a couple guys here and there who buck the trend, who make the scouts look stupid because, here's a 3-star and look at him. He's going to be in the NFL one day. Well, you see now the difference between getting a couple of guys here and there, a handful of them, and stockpiling a roster from top to bottom with those types of players. Sure, you can have 3 stars who will pan out. Kyle Trask is the one most fans like to point to. He was a 2-star. David Reese, a great linebacker for Florida. Sure, he didn't even make an NFL roster, but he was a guy who made a lot of plays for the Gators. He was a great college player. You can't make a living with a college football roster, especially in the SEC, where it's week in, week out. But I would argue the Pac-12 won't exist anymore, but even in the Big 12, even in the ACC, you can't make a living just getting 3 stars and a couple of 4 stars here and there, the way that Dan Mullen and to a degree Jim McElwain did. You need to have 4 and 5 stars on the majority of the 2 deep of your team, or you're just not going to win. And we saw that happen again this Saturday.
Well, think about that. This is just anecdotal, but the guy that blocked the punt, safety Jonel Aguero, who Florida
in a second,
yep, to him. And see, it's that. We've lost recruiting battles like that for years now to Georgia. Years.
A decade. Literally a decade.
We are starting to LJ McCray, that's another significance of winning a recruiting battle like LJ McCray. Yeah. Georgia wants him on their roster. Florida has him now committed. He's slated to sign in less than 2 months, but that's the kind of battles Florida was losing. And it was on full display this Saturday of all of the recruiting battles Florida has lost over the last, decade, but especially in the last 4 years, who would have been playing on the field this Saturday. That's the kind of shift that has to start happening. Otherwise, Georgia is going to just beat the hell out of Florida for the next decade to come. And they're going to continue to win the SEC, and Florida will be average at best if they cannot compete. So this is the measuring stick that we have to equate ourselves to moving forward. If we are to be anything, we aspire to be champions again. They are the champions. We have to do everything that they're doing in order to be that again. And it just did not happen this Saturday.
It's even worse than that, Chris. You think about this. Even the few battles that Florida beat Georgia in on the recruiting trail still didn't help Florida. Marcus Burke was someone that Florida fans were very happy about. We beat Georgia for Marcus Burke. What did he do?
Jason Marshall is one, right? But I mean, it's more of the top 100 talent that Florida has to be beating on a consistent basis.
I'm saying that you're right. That's a problem. Georgia's winning the majority of those battles. I'm saying that compounding that issue is the additional separate issue of even in the rare instances where Florida does beat Georgia for a kid, the kid still doesn't wind up producing for the Florida Gators. Jason Marshall, Marcus Burke, the two big examples that we see this year. So you put those two things side by side. Tack on the fact that Georgia has out-recruited Florida for a decade now. And the main point of that talking point is when you have a team that's beaten you 2-3 years in a row on the recruiting trail, you can probably flip that if you have the right coach come in and you do well enough on the field. You start stacking up recruiting classes that are better than yours, like Georgia has done to Florida for 5, 6, 7, 8 or so years, it gets harder and harder to turn that around because that's a machine. Georgia doesn't even have to recruit anymore, really. The program recruits itself. Chris, I think this is before you got here even, but like OG and all kinds of weather forecast listeners will remember when I had Alex Fiedo on the pod to preview the Gator baseball season of 2021, I asked him, yeah, so how did Sully recruit you? And he just looked at me and laughed. He's like, what are you talking about? He didn't have to recruit me. Florida's in the College World Series every single year. He didn't have to do anything. The program recruited itself. And that's what we've heard about Nick Saban in Alabama. That's what we heard about Bobby Bowden at FSU in his heyday. And now that's what we're seeing happen with Kirby Smart at Georgia. So now it's going to be that much more difficult for Florida to overtake Georgia. And Chris, I'd argue it's not possible until Kirby slows down, grows older, retires, because he's got a machine running there. You see, Florida has an elite class right now, the number 3 class in the country. Everyone's thrilled about it. Still not as good as Georgia's. So we're going to have to start winning games on the field. And then Georgia is going to have to start losing additional games and kind of slipping a little bit for us to truly overtake them. Our best hope now as Gator fans is to match them, to get on the same playing field with them, and then hope that our coaching can make the difference in the game. And well, we'll talk about that because that's another issue.
Right. Well, to your point on right now where Georgia is in the recruiting class, they're currently ranked obviously number one, as mentioned, with 314.49 points. Their average player ranking for the class as of this time, 93.54, 4 5-stars committed, 18 4-stars, 27 total commitments. The Gators, 5 short of that number, so they are a little bit lower. That's why they're at that 291.32 mark. This is the second highest class since 2013. It could be the second highest class in the history of recruiting rankings by the time it's all said and done, if it holds and we add a few more guys. But we do have 2 5-stars committed, 15 4-stars, and an average player ranking of 92.67. So that's almost 1 full percentage point still below where Georgia is average-wise, 2 5-stars short of where they're at, and 3 4-stars at. The top 100, right now, it's basically even, but Georgia has more top 300, top 150. It is a better class than ours right now. However, if you span that out over 3 to 4 years in Florida, let's say that they recruit at the same place that there are right now. Florida is the number 3 recruiting class for 4 consecutive years. Georgia is the number 1 class. Ballpark. You could still see that's ballpark. We're in there. Like, we're not going to see a result 43-20 or 20 points being beat by Georgia for 3 consecutive years if you do that, right? I think that is much closer, and that's kind of where Georgia was at, but when Alabama was recruiting at the number one as the number one team in the country for many years, Nick Saban had that machine that you talk about. So if Napier is able to get recruiting at a point where it's in the ballpark where it is now for 3 to 4 consecutive years, then you could conceivably see a scenario where it starts evening out. You're not losing 3 in a row to Georgia. Maybe you're trading blows every other year to Georgia. I would much rather be there than where we're at, obviously, right now. But I think the biggest glaring thing that has to change in order for Florida to beat Georgia is the line of scrimmage. Defensively, right now, Florida probably has the best defensive line class in the country. I think that there's a strong argument for that. Offensive line, on the other hand, not so much. And if you look at the offensive line recruiting over the last 10 years, it by far is the worst position that Florida has recruited. They have missed on numerous battles for players at the offensive line position, in the tackles, at the guards, in the top 100 of 247. And Georgia has been at the center of many of those recruiting victories. Right now, I think the number one target on Florida's board for 2024, if we didn't land anybody else but we got him, is Jordan Seaton. Jordan Seaton is a day one starter at the University of Florida if he commits. Day one. I think Florida has to do whatever it takes to get him on campus and in orange and blue next year. He is the most important recruit in 2024, and I'd argue maybe the most important recruit in the last 4 years. Obviously, getting a DJ Lagway is important, but if you have nobody to block for DJ Lagway, it is not going to matter. He's going to be dancing and running for his life in the backfield from Georgia defenders for the next 3 to 4 years.
So I agree with you about 95%. I will push back 5% on that the offensive line recruiting isn't that good. I'm 95% in agreement, by the way. So don't bite my head off, because I'm 95% agreeing with you. But I will say that
you're allowed to have a different opinion. It's okay.
Well, so here's the counter argument. I will say that I'm very, very high on the upside of Rod Kearney for Florida. He has to be developed. Florida is going, we'll have this conversation in a little bit. Florida's going to need to make a move with its coaching staff. The 2OL coach approach is clearly not working, but I think that the talent is there. The potential is there. I'm very high on Fletcher Westfall. I think he could be a guy that comes into the University of Florida and plays well. But here is where I will go back to the 95% of agreement with you and say what I said earlier, which is, you know what? That's the difference between getting a couple guys here and there versus stockpiling your roster with those guys. Florida cannot win games with only two or three offensive linemen on the whole roster that can match up with the Georgia Bulldogs. So, you know, I think that there is there are development issues. Sure, I agree with anyone who's going to come back and say that. The offensive line coaches, Darnell Stapleton and Rob Sale, you know, I don't question their intelligence. I don't question their pedigree. I don't question their deservingness for even being hired in the first place by Florida. It's clearly not working. They got to go. But I think that if Napier can land a Jordan Seaton, I think that the conversation will flip overnight, because that will be a sign of massive, massive progress. When you tack him on to the Fletcher Westfall and you tack him on to the upside that Rod Kearney has, you can at least there say, all right, Chris, what have I been saying all year long? Progress. I'm asking for progress. I'm asking for some signs that things are headed in the right direction. That would be that sign. You have to keep it going. The trajectory has to keep going up. We can't just plateau there and say, okay, Jordan Seaton, we're good. We don't have to recruit offensive linemen for another 2-3 years. No. Not saying that. But it would be a sign of, all right, Billy, you got my attention. Let's see where things go.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at the last four recruiting classes for Georgia. Georgia has gotten, I'm almost through it now. They've gotten nine offensive linemen in the top 100 in the last 4 years. How many has Florida gotten? For those that can't see because they're listening on audio, it's a big fat goose egg. Zero.
And zero, haven't even been close.
Top 100.
Haven't been close.
Top 100. Broderick Kearney, as Neil mentioned, is the best offensive line recruit that Florida has gotten since Martez Ivey.
Which is amazing, because Martez Ivey, there's another one for you stars don't matter guys, because he was, I think, he was fine. Certainly did not play at a five-star level at the University of Florida.
He played near an all-conference level. I think there was a couple times.
So that's a solid four-star.
That's okay.
He was fine. He was fine.
He was never an all-American like he should have been, like five stars were supposed to be. But, I mean, I'd take that right now, because we don't have a single all-conference to caliber offensive.
The closest is probably – the closest thing to it, he's not there, but the closest is probably Austin Barber.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe Mike.
I would say it's a pretty strong delta between all conference and, honorable mention would be the close.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, the right side, Chris, is this a separate conversation? The right side of the offensive line was just awful. Right. Damian George, an Alabama signee. There you go. Stars don't matter, people. Here's another bullet.
He was a low 4-star at Alabama, but there's a reason he transferred out of Alabama. If
you're
he was
right,
good, he would have been playing at Alabama.
You're right. However, there's the counter argument that, well, if Nick Saban wants him, he's a 5-star in my book, because clearly now Nick Saban knows how to identify talent. So what do you think of that?
Like, that's a good point, though. I think of all the positions that are probably the worst to recruit the portal for, it's probably offensive line. Offensive line is one of the worst hit rates in the transfer portal thus far. The only one that you could really hang your hat on is Osiris Torrance. And Osiris Torrance didn't play football up until about 2 years before he entered college. He was more of a basketball guy. And then Billy Napier found him out of nowhere, turned him into a star at Louisiana in the conference there. And then at Florida, balled out for a year, and now he's playing in the NFL. I mean, that's the anomaly in the transfer portal for the offensive lineman. You really have to build your offensive line at the high school ranks and develop them over a 3 to 4 year period in order to see a difference. And I agree with you. I think that there is a lot of potential, you know, with a guy like Najee Harris, Roderick Kearney, hopefully Fletcher Westfall, and hopefully Jordan Seaton. Like, that's a solid offensive line forming there, both on the interior and on the outside. But that's 4 guys. You need to recruit. That's why you have to take
12. You need three times that.
Well, you need roster. At least 4. I would say you need at least 4 to 5 guys every recruiting class. And you need a lot of those to be toward the top 100.
Yeah.
At least 1, maybe 2. I mean, we're landing top 100 defensive linemen. We're landing top 100 linebackers. We're landing a top 100 quarterback now, safety. I mean, you name it. Almost every position has a top 100 guy now at it. Since Billy Napier has arrived, offensive lineman is the one that he hasn't. And I think that begs the question. I said it several weeks ago in the viral clip he put out. The 2 offensive linemen coach is dead. It's over. And it once again was on full display this Saturday. It's got to go. It needs to end. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the changes that we'll talk about that in the next segment of what's got to happen this offseason for things to get better at Florida. That's 1. To me, that may be number 1, because that shakes up what you can do for the rest of the staff and who you bring in as a play caller, potentially another offensive line coach, or maybe bring in some guys that are better recruiters of certain positions.
Well, so before we move on, that is one thing I think we should touch on, because we're going to talk recruiting, I think, heavily between now and the next time. Well, the next iteration of the Billy Napier era, meaning the 2024 football team. We'll talk about this plenty, but it's not all bad with recruiting. It's not like we have to see improvement in so many different areas. Like we said, Florida does have the number 3 overall class. And Chris, as you touched on, for as questionable, I won't say it's bad because we don't know what happens with Jordan Seaton, but for as questionable as the OL recruiting is right now, Chris, you said Florida has the best defensive line class in the country. Let me just give some perspective to that. Florida has LJ McCray, who is unanimously a top 10 recruit in the country at any position. I'm not even going to include rivals. They've lost all credibility. But aside from rivals, every other one, On3, ESPN, 247, the Fox even uses that, some kind of combo system. They have him as a top 10 recruit. He's in that class. Then you have Amaris Williams, who is a top 46 player, or number 46 player, I should say. Another top 50 guy. Jamonte Waller, another top 50 player. And again, this is player in the country, not top 50 defensive lineman, top 50 overall player in the country. And then Nasir Johnson is in the top 75 as well. So you have 3 of the top 50 players in the country. You have 4 of the top 75 players in the country, all on the defensive line. They're all committed to Florida. So that is a loaded defensive line class. So for the defensive line issues that we saw, the inability to sack Carson Beck, I can at least be the positive one. Look at me being positive. I'm the negative one of the two of us. Look at me being positive here. Help is on the way in that aspect. We're going to fix that problem. The other problem, of course, the offensive line remains to be seen if we'll fix that. But at least on one of the 2 sides of the line of scrimmage, help is on the way. Florida will fix that in the coming years.
Yeah, Florida will fix that on the defensive line. I do think this defense is going to continue to get better under the tutelage of Austin Armstrong. And I think that the majority of the fixes, I don't want to overreact. I saw a lot of overreaction, I think, yesterday, and saying, what has Corey Raymond done recently? And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, Corey Raymond, are we really going to go there right now? I know it's a bad day, but come on. Like, the corners clearly were playing with very little effort, and I'm going to call them all out. They all played with piss poor effort on Saturday. Every single one of them. The want to tackle, the desire to go hawk down the ball was awful, and it was on full display on the third down conversion that went for a touchdown to Ladd McConkey over the middle, completely put everybody on skates. Nobody, he went untouched 30 yards after the catch to the end zone for a touchdown. And after that, that's a backbreaker type of play. There was zero effort on that. And that happened multiple times throughout the day as Georgia converted third down after third down after third down. Our third down defense was back to the Todd Grantham era. It was very esque of that time period and not good. It was just an awful effort. And that's another area where Florida currently right now has some top guys committed and potentially could get some more top guys committed at the safety and corner position if they're able to close strong on the recruiting trail with some top 100 guys, similar to maybe a Zay Mincy, as well as maybe flipping a guy like a Charles Lester from Florida State or a Jameer Grimsley from Alabama, who is not top 100, but is caught in the eye of Corey Raymond as a player that he would like to bring in to the University of Florida. So we're not done on the recruiting trail. There's a lot of work to be done, but it's very obvious the glaring number one need is offensive line. If we get a few more guys there, that could make a huge difference. So, you know,
Chris, before we move on, we got to point out, because we are expanding, you know, that this is a fairly new show. We are growing. We are gaining new listeners every week. So for those of you who've heard this before, feel free to skip ahead 20, 30 seconds. For those of you who are new listeners, keep it respectful, but keep it real is the mantra of our podcast. So Chris calling out what he called piss poor effort. There's nothing personal about this. Just for, if this is the first time you're listening to the show, you have to understand there's nothing personal behind this. We are sure that Jalen Kimber and Jason Marshall are good people off the field. You know, we've seen them after games, just signing autographs for little kids or standing there well after they have any obligation to be there. Good people. The game tape that they roll out is just indefensible. And there's a clear distinction between the player and the human being behind them. And we're never going to go after the individual unless the individual does something off the field that they shouldn't be doing, like a Jalen Kitna situation. Barring that, it's never going to be about the individual. It's always going to be about the player. And the game tape that we saw from 3 and from 8 were just god-awful. And that's the nicest way to put it.
You know what? I'll give 3 credit. He had 3 really good pass breakups in the middle of that game. You know, that was great. We needed that the entire day, though. When you play the University of Georgia, the number one team in the country, the two-time defending national champions, you have to give your effort play after play after play after play. We knew going in this game we had to play a perfect game to win, and we did not do that. We did not do that. And when you see effort plays like that, where there's not a want to tackle, when there's not a want to go get the ball, we got to call it out. They're going to call it out. And it's like you said, it isn't personal, but we just know the level you have to play in order to beat a team like Georgia. And that wasn't the level that I don't believe they're capable of personally. I think they actually are good football players. I don't think they're playing to a level or the ability that they are blessed with, but also understand who you're playing. You're not playing Vanderbilt. You're not playing Charlotte. You're playing Georgia. And
even against those teams, that's not acceptable. There was no reason that we should have only beat Charlotte 22-7.
Yeah.
Every game is a natty.
Agreed. Yeah. And you know, when you put on that helmet, when you wear that Gator logo, it means something.
And that's the thing, like Chris and I could never do that. We're not that kind of athlete. Chris runs marathons. He literally just ran the Chicago Marathon. He's not that kind of athlete.
Nope.
but that's the thing. It's never meant to be an attack on any player. We're just looking at the talent that you guys have to have all those offers from Alabama and Clemson and Oklahoma and Georgia and et cetera. And here you are just standing still while your former teammate, by the way, Jalen Kimber, starting at the University of Georgia, just runs right by you while you just casually stand there and do nothing. Like that's infuriating. As a fan who just watches that, and as the media person, I'm just watching this. Like, you know, for those of you who don't know, it's in all kinds of weather, is that hybrid, that sweet spot between fan and media. So the fan of me is infuriated in that. The media part of me is like, what am I supposed to make of this? You're more talented than you're showing. What is wrong with you here? Like, what is happening?
We've said that time and time again. The common theme for some of these losses, Kentucky and Utah, there was a lack of desire to go tackle. And even the South Carolina game, when they scored 39 points on us, there was a lack of desire to go make a play, lack of desire to tackle. And that's why we've seen some drop off in our defense, unfortunately, from the great efforts that we had early on this season. It has not gotten it started to regress back to the mean, if not even worse. And I'm really hoping in the last month here that this defense can make some strides. And I think they'll have some opportunities to, especially this coming Saturday at home. I think they'll have an opportunity to do that on the road against Missouri and then against Florida State. I mean, notice I kind of skipped over LSU because I think LSU is a juggernaut offensively right now. But I think there's going to be some opportunities for Florida to come up, make some improvements, and just start holding yourself accountable as a player that takes a lot of pride, hopefully, in wearing that logo. And, you know, I don't know, for some of those guys, maybe it is they're nearing the end of their career. Play for something, play for some pride, and play to get this program back to the level that we all aspire and want it to be, which is on par with where Georgia is right now. We want to be competing. We want to, I mean, we love going to Jacksonville every year. That was my 13th consecutive Florida-Georgia game. I've gone for 13 years now. Every single time is a great time. But boy, would it be nice to go there and get a win consistently. 4-9 since I've
for me just one 4-9 just once. I'm 0-3 going to that game. But Chris, here's a question for you before we move on to our next topic of conversation. You said something that made me think about this. Do you think that Florida as a program right now is incapable of handling success? Because it seems like every time you get a big win, every time something goes right, you turn right around and you shit the bed, for lack of a better way to put it. You shit the bed. Last year, big win over Texas A&M, big win over South Carolina, Vanderbilt come, you know, like every single time it seems like we have momentum, something happens that it just feels like shouldn't happen.
You know, Neil, I think that's a really difficult question to answer playing in the SEC. And here's what I mean by that. Rebuilding in the SEC is a lot harder to do than it is in the ACC. I don't like talking about our rivals as much down south there in Miami, but let's look at them for a second. They're 6-2 in year two of rebuild, similar to how Florida is. They just came off a top five class, similar to what we have at this present time. Miami is 6-2. However, you look at their schedule, you are not what your record always says you are. If Florida played in the ACC and played Miami's schedule, what would their record be right now? I'd wager at least 7-1. 6-2, 7-1. The games and toss-up question would be North Carolina and A&M. The rest of them, Temple, Bethune-Cookman, Miami of Ohio, we'd beat all those teams, and we would smoke them, right? It's harder to do that in the SEC when you – week over week, anybody can beat you in the conference. And then the fact that we play a non-conference rotation opponent like a Florida State at the end of the year. Next year, we're going to play UCF and Miami. It is hard to sustain, I think, goodwill, good vibes, momentum, because of the fact of who we're playing week in and week out. We had the benefit of a nice little stretch here in the beginning of the season where we only played, I guess, technically one ranked team before we played Georgia. Kentucky wasn't ranked at the time, although they were undefeated. They could have easily been ranked at that time. They were ranked after the victory over us. It's harder to do.
Well, no, two, Tennessee and Utah.
Okay, I beg your pardon. So I stand corrected. So Tennessee and Utah, but still, it's harder to do it and sustain it over when you're, it's harder to do a rebuild in the SEC in the present day when you have juggernauts like Georgia, even like Alabama, who I still consider a established program, even though they have probably fallen off where they've been the last 10 years a little bit. They still could probably win the SEC this year if things went their way. It's harder to do it. And we're going to find that out in November when we play three ranked teams. And we'll just have to see where everything goes. But I think I'm starting to realize I'm not so sure it's a problem of us not being able to sustain momentum as it is the circumstances of the hand we're dealt. And I know I don't want to make excuses for that, but I think there it needs to be said that it's just a lot more difficult to play in the SEC than it is to play in the other conferences in the country.
So here I'm putting my interviewing hat right back on, but here comes another question for you. Then, if that's your answer, do you believe that Florida's top five recruiting class this year, and let's say that Florida goes and signs another top five class in 2025, mm-hmm. do you think that that would fix that issue?
There's no way to tell until you – I don't want to speculate.
Do you think it is more likely than not?
It increases our chances. Yes. I think it increases our chances of being able to win more games and to sustain success and momentum. Yes, I do. Talent – it Jimmy's and Joe's beat X's and O's. Okay. Like you said, Kirby Smart was making fun of Dan Mullen for not being able to recruit at the post game press conference. I thought it was hilarious. It is true.
Sure.
And Billy Napier is showing that he can recruit. He's going to have to answer the next question, which is what we questioned Kirby Smart for years was, can you develop? Can you turn the recruiting classes into wins? So if Billy Napier signs a top three, let's say at least a top five class this year, another top five class next year, that would mean you've had two straight top five classes. Plus, I mean, the 2023 class wasn't bad. We've talked about this ad nauseum. I don't want to rehash the whole thing again. That was basically player average ranking a top 10 class. The difference is that we just lacked the top end elite talent like we're getting this year and the numbers. We only had 20 commitments in that class.
Plus,
sure. We will say that name one. We will not even say that name another time in this podcast, but you get the point. That was a top 10 caliber class. So then you're going to have three classes of guys that Billy Napier's recruited, maybe a few portal hits here and there. I do think it increases the chances. Yes. But if you get to 2024, 2025, and you're still going only, you're fighting for 6-7 wins, then yeah, that's a problem. And that to me shows you can't develop talent. And I think I think Billy is going to get another pass this year because we all understood the rebuild that was ahead of us. Next year, if he's sitting here at 5-3, another 20-point loss to Georgia, maybe a bad loss to Kentucky, I think that the noise in the system will be a lot louder and the seat will be warm. I don't think his seat's warm. I think that it's dumb to even talk about. I laugh at fans now that say Napier should be fired. Like it's just not going to happen this year. And it's not going to happen next year either. Like I think the guy's going to get 4 to 5 years. I really believe that. I think the administration knew what they signed up for when they hired him. And, you know, we've seen some results in the recruiting and I think the NIL game has gotten a lot better. There's still room for improvement and all of that, but by and large, it's in the right direction. We are seeing some progress in some facets. But Neil, as I think we're about to talk about, we're going to have to see some changes this offseason for us to get to that other side and feel more confident that we can sustain success over a long period of time. Neil, what are some of the things that we have to do this offseason for Florida to take that next step? Because right now we're looking at probably winning 6-7 games in the regular season this year, which Gator fans, if we get to 7-5, I would take it. 100% take it. A one game improvement. Maybe you get 8 wins in the bowl game. 2 game improvement from last year. 1-2 game improvement from last year would be huge. Neil, what do you think that Billy Napier needs to do in this offseason? What are 3 things? Give the fans 3 things. He does this, we could see some success next year.
I mean, I think they're all very much related to each other. I think that Corey Raymond is safe. Jabbar Jalouk, the running backs coach, is safe. Sean Spencer is safe. I mean, you can't be mad at the linebacker play. So, you know, those guys are safe. I think that there has to be, beyond those guys, there's got to be a complete reach. And Billy Gonzalez is safe as receivers coach. I think that there has to be a complete reshuffling of the staff, a complete restructuring and just reconfiguration of how things work. Starting with, we need a special teams coordinator because we saw another instance of special teams letting Florida down. It only cost us 2 points this time in a game that we lost by 23. It's the difference between 41-20 and 43-20. But it's not the first time special teams has let us down. It's not the fourth time special teams has let us down. That has been a consistent and continued pattern from the start of last season to this season. And I'm not mad at Chris Couch. I can't blame him. He's a quality control assistant. What the hell is he supposed to do? He's not an on-field position coach. Like, why the people that yell and scream about Chris Couch baffle me. What do you expect him to do? He doesn't have that kind of power. Napier, as the head coach, is the one who structured his staff in a way that he has two offensive line coaches. Spoiler alert, that's coming next. That's the next issue we're going to talk about. But he's the one who structured his staff in a way that you have two guys coaching one position. You only are allowed so many on-field coaches, so some other aspect of the game is going to have to suffer without having an on-field assistant, and it happens to be special teams. That's got to be fixed. Number two, the offensive line coach situation. I don't think that by themselves, either Rob Sale or Darnell Stapleton are terrible. I don't think that they're completely incompetent, but it's pretty clear that at least one of them, if not both of them, are going to have to go. And most likely, probably both of them. Because, I mean, the talking point that I got this offseason was from the offensive linemen, mostly from Austin Barber and Micah Mizkua, who I like them both, by the way. But anyway, talking point was, if one guy talks to you in one way and that doesn't resonate with you, and the other guy comes in and talks to you in a different way, one of those two methods of coaching is going to work. Well, no, because neither of them are working, because the offensive line just got bodied by Georgia the way it got bodied by Kentucky. So that's going to have to get fixed. Need one offensive line coach who can effectively and adequately do the job there. And oh yeah, by the way, recruit and do that part of the job too. And the third thing that's going to have to get fixed is Florida needs a play caller. The fourth and one where you snap the ball to ETN 5 yards behind line of scrimmage. That's not the only reason Florida lost the game, but let's be real. That really hurt. Things were already trending Georgia's way. That happens, and it just opens up an avalanche of momentum for Georgia. I worded the tweet as, like, I think it was this play, or this lost us the game. I didn't say cost us. I said this lost us the game. What I meant by that was whatever chance Florida had to claw its way back into the game, gone. This destroyed the last bit of realistic hope Florida had to get themselves back into the game. That's just one example. The pass route concepts aren't that imaginative. Every now and then, yes, Eugene Wilson can break one off and make you look good just by getting the ball into his hands, but they're not that creative. There's going to have to be a complete rebirth of Florida's passing game next year. Maybe it comes with a Ben Arbuckle, who I've talked about a few times on the website and allkindsofweather.com itself, but not really as much here. So maybe I'll give him a few seconds of audio time here. Ben Arbuckle is a guy that has this kind of machine gun offense that just utilizes waves of receivers flying all over the field, forcing defenses to defend every square inch of turf, both horizontally, all 53 and a half yards wide, and then however many yards down the field the team is from the line of scrimmage to the end zone, and then the 10 yards in the end zone. He's got one concept where I'll have two guys kind of pick for each other and run to the opposite corners of the end zone. He's got, I think he has a slot receiver and a tight end do it. And one of them is usually open because the defense doesn't know what to do because they're essentially picking for each other. Usually you have one guy, or it's called a rub when the offense does it. Usually one guy rubs to get the other one open. There's an option here for the two of them to rub each other open. And you have two guys running corner routes and the quarterback can choose one because one of them is probably going to be free. So stuff like that, it just doesn't happen with this Florida offense. It's just not there. So a new offensive coordinator who can overhaul the passing game, whether it's with Graham Mertz at the controls, he still has one more year of eligibility, or it's DJ Lagway, or hell, if it's Max Brown, if say one of them gets hurt and the other one is has a virus or something and you got to play Max Brown, it can be an offense where anyone who is signed by the University of Florida, anybody who Billy Napier trusted to offer a scholarship position to, can run the offense at Florida with, yeah, there might be a learning curve, but there will be relative levels of ease to it. Need to do that this offseason. So we'll talk about all those more in the offseason, but those are three things that have got to be on Napier's to-do list this Christmas.
Yeah, and to your and to further your point on the offensive line or the offensive coordinator position, he's gonna have some weapons returning next year. Look at what Trey Wilson now has done. I mean, he once again flashed on film, was able to get behind the Georgia defense multiple times, speed and space kills. He is going to hopefully take a major jump next year as receiver one. Then you look at a guy maybe like Andy Jean, Aiden Mizell, Aiden Mizell being a top 100 receiver. Andy Jean, I think a very underrated four-star, and we heard a lot of things out about him in fall camp. I think he's been battling some injuries this fall, really haven't seen him. I think he could be headed for a red shirt this year, but that's a guy that next year who certainly has the talent to come out there and do it. You've also had the emergence of Arles Boardingham, and then you have the two-headed monster of Johnson and ETN, who will have eligibility next year. At the bare minimum, ETN will be back, potentially Johnson if he decides to play another year in college. That's a solid arsenal of weapons, not to mention the fact you're going to bring in a guy like Jure Hawkins or Tawoski Abrams, who are showing also they can get open and have a lot of speed and space. And then you never know who you bring in through the transfer portal. I would imagine that Billy, that's the thing I'm going to say here, maybe to differ, because I agree. Special teams coordinator, at least somebody on the field that's dedicated to special teams. Offensive coordinator, a play caller, somebody that's innovative, that can really get the ball and make the defense cover every yard from sideline to sideline and really stretch the defense to open things up for all of its weapons. And then I also think Billy is going to have an opportunity to be very picky and selective in the transfer portal. And why is that? Because finally he's going to have a class of about 25 this year. He had a class of 20 the year before and a class of 20 before that. The majority of the guys he's recruited are still on the roster and have not transferred out. Other than one, that was David Connors. Well, it remains to be seen what happens to Kamari Wilson. I wouldn't expect him back next year, just the way things have gone this year with him. So it's only two guys out of the 65 you've recruited through high school, right? And then you've also brought in some guys that have additional eligibility through the transfer portal. So what that means now is that this year, you're not looking to fill over a dozen roster spots through the transfer portal. You're looking to maybe fill 3 to 4. And that means you can be very selective of who you go out and you pick. So I think that the big thing, though, is you cannot wait. You cannot. I know you want to evaluate, and I know you want to be sure and cross your T's and dot your I's, but you cannot let guys slip through your fingers like Keon Coleman. We're probably going to need a receiver like a Keon Coleman to come transfer to Florida next year, because you're going to lose Ricky Pearsall, and you're not going to want to rely on a lot of unproven young receivers outside of Eugene Wilson. We're definitely going to probably have to bring in another offensive lineman, probably at the tackle spot. They're out there. You're just going to have to find the one. And when you do find the one, you better get them. And then I would imagine there's probably some positions you're going to have to fill in, maybe corner, maybe safety. So I do believe there's going to be a couple of positions you're going to want to have that is kind of a Band-Aid to help the younger guys learn. But there's going to be, I believe, a luxury this coming season for Billy Napier in the transfer portal, where he and his staff are going to be able to be selective because they've now done the legwork and bringing in, now this will be their third high school recruiting class of 20 or more. At this point, the entire roster is yours. By next year, there really won't be any more Dan Mullen players left on the roster. It will be completely yours, which means all the pressure is now on you to develop and win with them. But also, you can be selective in the transfer portal, which is what we've said is what it's meant to be. It's not meant to fill out an entire roster, but it is meant to plug massive glaring needs where you have them on your football team. And like we've said, offensive line, you're at the tackle position, I would say probably a receiver, probably a safety, and then maybe somewhere else on the defensive side of the ball is going to be or running back too. Also, I think maybe running back, if we don't take another running back in the high school class, we'll probably need another one, because you don't know what the status of Cam Carroll is coming off an ACL injury, and maybe even if Montrell Johnson leaves early for the NFL. Those are all things you have to consider going into next year.
Well, that's what a Tre'Von Webb will be for. But I mean, I do agree with you.
You still want 4 to 5 running backs sure. in that. Yeah.
No, absolutely. But I would even argue that the transfer portal is, I mean, we're not really in the business of giving Dan Mullen a ton of credit here because of how he left this program, but I think he utilized it perfectly, absolutely perfectly. In 2019, the Gators had a really, really good team, but there was one glaring need for that kind of hybrid defensive line linebacker position. So he went to Louisville. He got John Grenard. That was one of the best defenses Florida's had since before Mullen got here. In fact, it was the only top 10 defense Florida has had since Dan Mullen got here to Florida. So that was an example of you have an overall good defense. There are a lot of good players on that team, but you have a big hole here at that hybrid position. So go and get a guy, go and get one guy to fill that spot. Come in, seamless transition, boom, Florida top 10 defense, 11-2, Orange Bowl win, great team. So Florida is now recruiting at the high school level at a very, very successful rate. Top 3 class, I don't expect it to really fall that far. Maybe you think, okay, Alabama will make its move. They're sitting at 20 commits. Florida's at 22. Florida probably not going to fill out. It's 27 or so. They'll probably wind up with 25 or 6 maybe. Alabama, you expect, is going to add another 5 or 6. Those will all be some of those big fish that remain uncommitted. So they might pass Florida, but Florida's not going to fall out of the top 5. I think maybe a doomsday scenario for this class is it finishes number 5 overall. Maybe you could say a Texas A&M, just because, again, they're sitting at 20 and their average player isn't that far below Florida. But Florida's not falling very far. So long story short, Florida's high school recruiting is at the level it needs to be at. You need to keep it that, and you need to supplement that with the transfer portal. And I think Napier is going to learn that. He's going to learn exactly what he has to do this offseason in the portal. He's going to hopefully learn from some of his misses this past cycle or two, his past portal misses. And I mean, all we can do, Chris, is just sit back and wait, because it's a slow and a painful process to rebuild. It sucks. It's not fun because there are a lot of growing pains and a lot of lumps you take. But we don't have a choice because, like you said, Napier's here for the long run, whether we like it or not.
And it sucks when your rivals are both top 4 in the country right now and angling for a college football playoff spot, national championship. Certainly Florida will have an opportunity to ruin one of those teams still this season when they come to the Swamp at the end of the season. But yes, it sucks being where we are right now, still rebuilding, only at 5-3, and watching our rivals walk all over us and get to gloat whenever they're winning big on Saturdays and we're still losing. But that's just how it goes. And hopefully Billy Napier continues to learn from his mistakes. I think he's shown a willingness to do that in the past. He doesn't strike me as an arrogant person, and I think he will learn and make the moves necessary to get this roster where he wants it. And he knows this is his shot as a Power 5 head football coach to do something, and I think he plans to take full advantage of it. I hope he does, and we're obviously all rooting for Billy to do it. But with all that being said, Neil, I think it's time to go ahead and let's grade this game. Let's give our final thoughts on this. It's been a good podcast thus far, and kind of – I think just letting it all out there, I think today was sort of a reality check. You know, we opened the podcast with some people may not be able to handle the truth, but this is the truth right now. This is the reality of the situation. It's going to take a little bit more time and obviously some moves and a willingness to change from this coaching staff, but the fan base, all you can say, be patient, enjoy the ride, and show up and support our guys. Show your support for them on social media. Show your support for them by we sell out the crowd and an all-black veteran appreciation day at the Swamp. As Neil's got, as if you're watching on YouTube, he's got his In All Kinds Weather hoodie there. You can go ahead and get yours at inallkindsofweather.com/merch. We'll put a link in the show notes down below, both on podcast form and YouTube, so you can go ahead and get that. But support the Gators. Support the Gators, because that is the only thing you can control. The only thing you control.
And by the way, that is a real thing. Just ask Joe Milton. That's a real advantage you can give the Gators, because I don't believe Florida beats Tennessee in a neutral field, and I certainly don't think Florida has a chance if that game is in Knoxville.
Agreed. So
Guess what?
Tennessee looks good right now. Tennessee is a 6-2 team right now. I mean, they look legit. And I mean, they could give Georgia a game in Knoxville later on this month, but support the team, show up, be loud. It's a noon kickoff. Make sure you're there early and have a great time in Gainesville this Saturday, which we look forward to previewing later on this week. So if you haven't followed along already, make sure to hit like and subscribe down below. Leave a comment, as Neil said, give your thoughts on the game down below. We want to hear from you. And also give us some ideas on what you want to see from the show, because it definitely helps improve the content that we bring you. All right, Neil, final thoughts. Let's get into grades. Let's grade offense, defense, special teams, and coaching, and an overall for what we saw this past Saturday. I'm sure this will be great. What do you got, Neil?
Yeah. I mean, look, Florida did finish with 339 yards of total offense, which you look at them and say, oh, well, they're playing Georgia, so that must be good. I'm not impressed. That doesn't sway me. 150 of that came in the last two possessions of the game when it was already a 30-point spread, so I don't care about that. That's an F. The first drive was fine. You know, first drive was great. I'm pretty sure that first drive was pre-scripted, because every single play looked like Florida knew exactly what was supposed to happen. And that was not the case on any play throughout the rest of the game. So that tells me you drew that drive up on Tuesday and you went and executed it. Great. You didn't know how to move the ball when Georgia adjusted. So F. Defense, F. 486 yards for Georgia is actually beneath their season average of 509. So congratulations, the Gator defense did actually drop Georgia's yards per game average, but it earns the F because of the game tape of the two corners we talked about. I don't want to make it seem like it was just the fault of Jason Marshall and Jalen Kimber. The defense could have gotten to Carson Beck and sacked him a couple times and helped the cause out. Maybe we could have ripped the ball away from some of their ball carriers, receivers, or running backs, but no turnovers and almost 500 yards of offense, plus that awful game tape, especially on the McConkey touchdown. That's just pitiful, and that's just not going to get the job done, and that's going to get you an F. That's a failing grade. Special teams, F, but I did have to think about this one for a minute. The block punt, obviously terrible. I like some of the punts I saw from Jeremy Crawshaw. I thought that Florida actually came fairly close to blocking one punt from Georgia. They didn't punt many times, but on one they did attempt. Florida, I thought, did come fairly close to it. So I give them some props for that. But you can't keep having catastrophes on special teams every week. So this is just more of a frustration of watching things continually and actively not get any better on special teams from Utah to now. At least we're not running two guys out there with the same jersey number, and at least we're correctly counting to 11. So that's why it's not the 2 out of 100 type of F grade, but it's a 50, 55 out of 100 F failure. Coaching, F. Napier, I don't know what you were doing on that fourth down where you direct snapped it to ETN, but I mean, I guess I'll use this as my chance to break it. I promised some fans I'd break it down later in more detailed fashion on the show. So here we go. It's stupid for a number of reasons. Number one, you direct snap it to a guy who's 5 yards behind line of scrimmage when Georgia is in goal line. Everybody on the Georgia defense, all 11 guys, are all tasked with crashing into the backfield and creating push. It's not like it's a 4 or 5 man box and they're in quarters defense, or even like an 8 man front, and you got maybe 3 guys as spies or just watching out for a play action rollout or RPO or something. No, you have 11 guys who are all designed to sort of counter push that QB sneak push. What did you think was going to happen? He was swarmed immediately. He's not going to outrun them to the edge, and he doesn't have any real routes to look down the field at. There's no way that play was going to possibly work unless he just Tebow truck sticked every single Georgia defender out of the way and just bowled them over. There was never a prayer that was going to work. So it was a very high risk. Obviously, the risk is giving Georgia the ball inside your own 25. Low reward. You're trying to get 2 or 3 yards. That play doesn't have a prayer of being broken off for a home run because Georgia controls the edge there. And there's a very low chance of that low reward actually being hit. it's a very low percent chance that that's going to actually get you the first down on fourth and half a yard, or maybe it was 2 feet. It was between a half yard and a yard. And again, you don't have the numbers there. It was a stupid play call. I don't hate the decision to go for it, period. I agree with the idea of going for it, but it was a stupid play call because, just to recap, it was a low reward. It was a high risk. It was a low percent chance of your low reward coming to fruition, and it didn't work. So it's all those things on top of it that just make that a bad idea. And again, then you go to the fact that Florida didn't really have an offense that was equipped to move the ball down the field that quickly. The route concepts aren't there. Maybe you could say that's not in-game coaching, but that's just something that Florida had 2 weeks to prepare now. They had 2 weeks to not completely overhaul the offense, but at least tinker with it, at least make some subtle adjustments here and there, maybe roll something out that Georgia hadn't seen on tape, something we talked about in the preview show. Of course, they didn't do it. So F, disappointed, but ultimately not surprised. And that is why Florida is going to have to hire an offensive coordinator for next year. Overall grade, it's an F, because again, I don't know what anyone thought was going to happen. I don't know why anyone would have expected anything differently, but a 3-touchdown loss is a 3-touchdown loss. And frankly, it was worse than that. Florida scored in garbage time. You were down 30. So this was an embarrassing loss for Florida, not because we expected anything different, but because you got your doors blown off. So F. Chris, floor's yours. What have you got?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was a bad loss, and I don't think I'm going to be any different here. I'm going to fail everybody, every position group, offense, special teams, and defense, as well as the coaching staff. This was a bad effort, and there's no sugarcoating a 23-point loss. You're correct. We scored a garbage time touchdown. Pat had the stats with it. Most of our offense came actually toward the end of the game when Georgia started playing backups. You know, and I'm really proud of the team for fighting through it and not giving up. And I think that there's a lot of buy-in still from this team. That's one of the positives I'll draw, is that there's a lot of buy-in still from this team. They believe in the mission of Billy Napier, the vision of what he's going to bring this program be one day, hopefully. But there's a lot of things that are going to have to change in order to get there. And we talked about it today with the coaching staff. They've got to make moves this offseason. They've got to continue to recruit at the level that they are in order to match Georgia. I mean, in the ballpark of where Georgia is. And we're just going to have to make a necessary adjustments over time and continue to try to make strides. I do think we're getting better. You know, we talk about progress is the theme for this year. Recruiting, there's progress there. I think overall, the defense, I would still take this defense over last year's defense. I do think there's a lot of positive signs. You're seeing a lot of effort play. Like, I called out some of the older guys for effort plays. I'm going to highlight one effort play that I loved, and that was from TJ Searcy. Actually ran down the side, down the middle of the field, and hawked down a Georgia ball carrier. He would have scored on that play if TJ Searcy didn't catch him. He caught him, and that's the kind of guy that we want in this program, wearing the orange and blue, repping that Gator logo.
Real quick, pointing that out, TJ Searcy, Billy Napier, signee, Jason Marshall, Dan Mullen, signee.
Yep. Yeah, no, right. And I think that there's a lot of buy-in from the guys that were recruited and brought here by Billy Napier. And not to say that there aren't Mullen guys that have bought in. I think there are plenty of Mullen guys that have bought in. I do believe, though, that the talent acquisition, the scouting is slightly different. And I think they're looking looking for different intangibles. Not just a number on a paper. I mean, obviously it matters. They're going to continue to recruit the top athletes in the country, as that trend has shown. But they're also looking for guys that are going to buy in and believe what the staff is trying to do. And TJ Searcy strikes me as that type of guy. And that's why he's played since day one. He has played every game since day one. That guy will start probably next year for Florida. He will be a great player at this university and hopefully somebody we remember for a long time. And I think there are other guys too that we're going to feel the same way about in the coming years that are currently on the roster. But there are a lot of youngins. I think we continue to play the youngins, give them all the experience, give them all the reps, because they are the future of this program. And by next year, the year after, I think that there'll be something to talk about. And we'll look back on a day like this and say we've come a long way. But right now, this is one of those games where it doesn't feel like we made a lot of progress, and therefore, overall, it is an F, because when you lose by 23 to your rival, it's tough, and it's just something we have to accept. The fact it is the truth, whether we can handle it or not. This is the reality we live in right now here with Gator Nation.
Chris, before we wrap up, I'm gonna ask you the same question that I posed on Twitter for everybody. If I offered you the following scenario: Florida will beat Arkansas this coming week. They will then go 1-2 in the next three games. You don't know who the win's coming against, but they will win one of them, either at LSU, at Missouri, or home for FSU. Meaning you finish 2-2 in the remaining four, and you finish 7-5. Florida finished, remember, 6-6 last year. Do you take it, or do you roll the dice? You do. Why?
Yes. It's an improvement. It's progress. And it allows us – that would mean we beat a ranked team. That would mean we'd actually beaten two ranked teams this year. Also progress. Chances are it's against our rival, Florida State, right? We play the best at home. If I had to bet, it's either that one or Missouri. And or you, that means you finish with a winning record in the SEC. Also progress. So that scenario means we finish with a better regular season record. We finished with a winning record in the SEC. We're recruiting better. And the majority of the guys that have made a difference this season are all returning next year. So, yes, I take it in a heartbeat. And they're not going to opt out. They're going to play in the bowl game, which means we might even get to 8 wins. 8 wins is a 2-game improvement from last year's 6-7. So, yes, 100%. Take it.
And you know what? I think that that is the most likely scenario. Florida, for whatever reason, is a terrible team outside of Gainesville. They're a pretty damn good one in the swamp.
But to your point, momentum. We beat a team on the road a couple of weeks ago. We broke that. Let's keep that momentum going. Let's beat Missouri. Like, remember last year too, this time, and we'll wrap the show up after this. We beat A&M on the road. Then we come home and slaughter South Carolina, and everything's riding high. And we're thinking we might finish 7-5, 8-4. Beat Vanderbilt, maybe beat Florida State on the road. Mm-hmm. And then the wheels fell off and we lose to Vanderbilt. We go 6-6. Maybe the opposite happens this year. You beat Arkansas. You put up a fight. I think that's the thing. Put up a fight against LSU. But then what if you beat Missouri and you're 7-4 going into that last game against Florida State? Raucous crowd in Gainesville. It's going to add the vibes that we had for that Tennessee game to start the season. Maybe even more of a frenzy.
Chance to knock FSU out of the playoff, maybe. Yes. Maybe. I still think they might go at 12-1.
Not with this many undefeated teams, though, this year. It's going
to
be a lot more difficult.
If they all stay undefeated. Well, Michigan and Ohio State have to play, so one of them is going to lose. But
a one-loss team in that conference is going to hold a lot more weight than a team in the ACC, as we talked about. That schedule is not the same thing. It's not the same thing. And you look at Florida State's schedule, it's a cakewalk before they play us. They're not going to play anybody worth a damn outside of Miami. But
and I would say Miami's not worth a damn after that near disaster against Virginia. Yep. But I mean, again, that's it, guys. Like, we have still a lot to play for. We have the chance to improve on last year's record. We said all year, we said it 4 times in this podcast alone. Chris, I think I speak for you two here. All we want is progress this year. We're not asking for a win total. I mean, I guess by proxy we are, but we're asking for some signs that things are headed in the right direction. Getting 7 wins would be an improvement over last year. Getting a chance to knock FSU out of the playoff, getting a chance to beat multiple ranked teams this year after only beating one last year. Well, there you go, from 1-2. And now, if we beat FSU, and assuming we take care of Arkansas, Florida will have gone unbeaten in the swamp.
Yep.
Can't hate that.
Not at all. So we'll have to see what happens, but we thank you all for tuning in tonight's episode of the In All Kinds Weather Forecast, recapping the Georgia game and what the Gators got to do to get back to the top of the mountain so they can once again compete with the elite of the SEC. If you have not already, please like, subscribe, down below. For watching on YouTube, leave a comment. If you're watching or listening on podcast form, please rate, review, leave a 5-star. Helps us grow and reach the rest of Gator Nation. We'll be back with you later this week for a preview of the Arkansas Razorback game as the Gators go for bowl eligibility at home. From all of us here at the In All Kinds Weather Forecast, have a great night and go Gators.